You're in the CMO suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello, hello, hello. It is Sean Halter, the host of the CMO Suite. Thank you again for joining us. I am with me today, co-hosting with me is Sam Pick. Hello, Sam.
Hello, Sean.
And I'm also with DJ Hamilton, as I like to call him, DJ the DJ. How are you?
I'm happy to be here.
Well, thank you. And with us today, we've got a great guest. We've got Brian King. Brian is with Owens Corning. And Brian, I feel like I've been cyber stalking you for maybe 10 or 15 years. Where were you just before you were over at Owens? Somewhere in Ohio, I feel like.
Oh, I'm still in Ohio, but I was with Black & Decker.
That's right, it was Black & Decker. Stanley Steamer.
Yeah, well, I've been with Stanley Steamer, and I've been with Stanley Black & Decker. I seem to like companies that have Stanley.
Let's start with Stanley in there. Well, listen, we thank you again so much for joining us on the show. You've lived in Ohio, and I know you've moved around a tiny bit. Tell us about how you took the job at Owens, and really what you feel like has changed since you took that direction.
Sure. Yeah, I've moved around a bit. I mean, I grew up in Canada, so I speak funny. So there's a people will probably
no shame in that, my friend.
Yeah, I know. It's good. I was born in the UK, so oh, wow. I was part of a corporate relocation when my dad moved us to Canada when I was a young person, and then I've done the same thing to my kids as well too. So journey to Owens Corning really took me back to 2009. I don't know if you remember what was going on in 2009, but there was a little bit of turmoil.
Couple things, a little blip in the economy from what I remember.
And I was in automotive at the time, so selling big shiny pieces of steel to guys in the back of auto dealerships, and well, that didn't really work out at the time. So there was a typical headhunter call, and ended up at Owens Corning. Thought building materials was something that was definitely going to be on the upswing, and it certainly has happened. I mean, the 2009 to now, I mean, the depths of the housing crisis, 2009, but Owens Corning's a pretty good company from a perseverance perspective. We got good financials, and so we were able to ride through that, and then now things are completely different.
Well, yeah. with Owens Corning, when Sean said that you were going to be joining us on the show, Brian, I said, Owens Corning, that's my mom's cookware. And Sean goes, no, DJ, no. It's insulation. And then it's so many things, right?
It's the same company, though. Am I wrong?
No,
or am
not.
I?
It's actually
ooh,
different.
You owe me money.
I do owe money now. Great.
We've got this sort of family tree thing here of all the different companies because
that's interesting.
Owens Illinois, who makes bottles. You've got Owens Corning, who makes fiberglass and building materials. You've got Dow Corning, who is the Corningware people that you know them. So there's all these companies that it was all sort of glass related, all based in Toledo, Ohio, and then different people doing different things caused all these companies to form.
Well, DJ is not wrong very often, and so if nothing else. If we get nothing else out of this, with you today, Brian.
I still don't think I'm wrong if they're all from the same tree.
Ish.
But we are, we actually have a stock sign that has nothing to do with that. Although I do get asked that on planes all the time when people see the logo. They're like, I use your stuff. And I'm like, no.
They're all 80-year-old women, right? Could you get this signed by the designer?
80-year-old women. What are you trying to imply?
Yes, nothing. Nothing. I'm implying nothing, my friend. So talk to us a little bit about how marketing has changed. With this show, I think one of the most interesting things for me since we started it was you think you kind of know the fact, yes, of course it's changing. Yeah, you need to know kind of the full funnel, but it's interesting just to get different perspective from different, CMOs and different marketers on what they've been challenged with a little bit and helping others within that C-suite itself understand that, there's no magic wand anymore. You can't just run a bunch of radio and a bunch of TV and magically consumers are going to make it. So talk to us a little bit about how that conversation maybe goes even internally there with that team and helping them to understand how much marketing has changed.
You're right. Press the easy button, right?
That's right.
That's what you want. It's all about marketing mix, and digital is probably the biggest thing that we have continuous conversations about in what is basically an old building materials type industry that's a lot of relationship driven sales that happen with our distributors. We love our customers. We can identify our customers. They're very easy to point out and generate those relationships with. But really, it's the digital piece that we talk a lot about, and the transformation from what I would call analog or basic or traditional type marketing to more. You mentioned the funnel and demand creation and demand generation and providing content to homeowners that eventually then in my business go and find a contract contractor, and the contractor puts a roof on, and they use Owens Corning products. So it's that sort of linkage, that value chain, and talking to folks internally about why we should be making investments in the digital field as opposed to some of the traditional things that, that we've been doing. And that, that conversation evolves, and you know, we're probably probably a follower, fast follower as an industry. We're probably not setting the world on fire from leading things, but we're certainly, I think we're certainly adapting and adjusting, and more of our mix from a marketing spend becomes digital every year.
And so you used the word a boot, right? Did anybody else catch that in there? There's a few little subtle Canadian things in there. Brian, help us to understand who your customer is in some ways, because again, you brought up the fact that, you know, you go and you hire a builder, and that builder may use whatever the manufacturer is that they work with. So how is it for you guys? Because I feel like it's been a consumer-facing brand in many ways, but you bring up a good point that it, that may also be, you know, very much a business-to-business. And so how do you navigate those two completely different targets in some ways?
Yeah, I mean, we refer to it as a B2B2C company. So, yeah. I mean, there is the consumer aspect, which is the homeowner. I mean, they ultimately write the check to put a roof on for us. But, I mean, the influencer is clearly the contractor. A lot of the times they make the choice of the actual product that goes on there. And sometimes it can be the choice from my roof's leaking, I just want a new one. You look like a person that's going to do this, show up on time and do all the things you're supposed to do. And so I'll just choose you. And that's the... ultimately the choice that a homeowner makes. So it traditionally has been a low involvement type category until it's high involvement, which is a marketer. The conversations I have internally here are, can we create demand? And I think in our business, we can't necessarily, well, if I had enough money, I'm sure I could create demand. I'm a good marketer. But I don't think that's the right ROI that we'd be delivering. So what we look for is, what are the instances that actually, when consumers are in the market, they've either got a leak in the roof, there's a storm, their house is older, right? How do we actually market to them? And then how do we tell them, you mentioned the brand, we've invested in the brand. We're probably the only brand in roofing that people can recognize. And that's not saying much, but it is, we've got the most recognized and trusted brand in the business. So we obviously leverage that. But the influencers that we talk to and spend a lot of time with is the actual contractor, the person that actually puts the roof on the house, and making sure that Owens Corning provides to them a great value proposition from a training perspective, how to be a better business person, how to sell in the home, how to close more jobs. That's where we spend a lot of our time.
Listen, we appreciate the time. I told you we'd keep this nice and short and sweet, my friend. Listen, if you want to find out more about Brian and find out a little bit more about Owens Corning, just check us out on thecmosuite.com. Thank you again for joining us, Brian.
Thanks, guys. I'm out.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings. You're in the CMO Suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Welcome back to the CMO Suite. With us right now is Mark Seguin with the CMO with PopChips. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Well, listen, we appreciate you joining us on the show today. So talk to us a little bit about your journey in getting to PopChips. How did you get into marketing in the first place?
Well, I guess I've been in the food business most of my life. I started bagging groceries when I was in high school and really worked my way through the grocery industry and ended up going to a management program that brought me to Los Angeles. And I looked for a food job in L.A. and I ended up finding a marketing gig with Dole Packaged Foods out in Westlake Village. So that was my first marketing gig. Probably 20 years ago, selling canned pineapple and fruit cups, have really worked my way up through the marketing industry ever since.
And then tell us about how you ended up over at PopChips.
Well, I ended up working at Dole in various positions in brand management, and then I went to a company called Wonderful, Wonderful Pistachios, Palm Wonderful, Wonderful Halos, a big agricultural concern here in California, and really worked for a husband and wife billionaire team here in L.A. that just built this gigantic, wonderful branded fresh fruits, vegetables, nuts business, and worked for them for about 9 years, and was running marketing for three of their biggest divisions of their company, which were all ag. And I was recruited over to PopChips about 5 years ago when a private equity came into the and bought PopChips, like the majority share of PopChips, and the founders were taking a bit more of a board role and less of a direct day-to-day role. They brought in a new CEO, and he wanted to move the headquarters to Los Angeles because we make our PopChips here in Los Angeles. But we, you know, we've been popping them here since the beginning, 10, 11 years ago now. And the CEO thought it would be better to have the headquarters here, so we were co-located, could be closer to what was going on. And he asked me to come in and find a headquarters, set up a headquarters, build out a marketing team, the whole works. So I started doing that 4.5, almost 5 years ago. And it's been a pretty crazy journey of, you know, really taking a founder-led, very fast-growing, trend-setting, better-for-you snack brand and figuring out how to take it to a national, on a national scale. What's a national brand look like? How do we make it super efficient? Bring in best practices for marketing and analytics, all while staying true to what the founders really did, which is create this amazing brand that people really had a great emotional connection to. So, and I've been doing that ever since. The last few months, the CEO that brought me in has taken a more of a step back to a chairman role, and he's on the board. And we're doing a bit something non-traditional here, where the head of sales, the head of the CFO, and myself, the three of us are collectively running the company now.
So it's interesting. We've talked to a couple of other CMOs who have moved elevated up into some of those kinds of positions. And I think one of the biggest takeaways that I've seen, you know, recently is the fact that those three pieces really have to be more aligned, it seems like, than ever before. That, you know, you can't be a CMO who just decides, well, here's, you know, where our traditional media is going to run, and hopefully it moves sales. If it doesn't, you know, that's not my issue. It seems like, again, all of those pieces are really becoming aligned. And so that's interesting that you guys have kind of taken that bit of a step. And so how has that shared role been? It seems like in some ways, maybe the CMO position is becoming more and more critical to sales every day.
Well, I think in my experience throughout my career, you know, the people in marketing who have a good commercial sensibility, who understand how to make things work in retail or, you know, online if you're selling direct to consumers, are really the ones who are a step ahead generally, because you have to be able to understand that the retail environment is where you open the door so that consumers can get to know your products. So if you have great advertising, great campaigns, you know, really fun brands, if people can't find them, it doesn't do you a lot of good. So I think being really close to sales is a critical factor for all marketing people to be successful. You know, I always have encouraged all the marketing folks that work with me, get out on as many sales calls as you can. Get to know the salespeople. That's where you're going to get really hear the heartbeat of what's happening within the company. And it'll make you just that much better when it comes to figuring out how to deliver your message efficiently to the consumer.
And speaking of campaigns, you launched the first TV ad for the brand. How was the response to that?
You know, it was good, but not great, if I'm going to be totally honest. You know, why not? I would say we came in, and my perspective was the brand had run into a little bit of a chop. We are seeing a lot of competition come in. We had created this Better For You snack brand that was really driving, you know, growth in a $17 billion snack category, but all the growth was coming out of these healthy brands. Lots of entrepreneurs coming into the category in a very short period of time. And so the pressure was on us to sort of maintain our position as the leader in the category of this Better For You category and continue to grow. And we were struggling. So I thought, okay, if we just get our awareness out there and drive hard with a broad voice, you know, we've got a great product, an interesting brand, that's going to do the trick. And it for sure drove awareness and positive metrics for the brand, and ultimately we saw increases in revenue. But it wasn't at a level that I had seen, for example, when I organized a marketing and a TV campaign for Wonderful Pistachios. I mean, that was a game changer for Wonderful Pistachios, but it didn't end up being a game changer for Pop Chips. And I think that was largely because for a smaller brand like this, with a sort of a specific mission and a specific approach, the broad voice of TV is probably not as efficient as things that you can do through social media, digital influencers, and those things. So I think it was just a different set of circumstances for this brand, and so ultimately it wasn't as successful as we had liked, and we shifted back to, you know, getting to know one snacker at a time is what we call it here, and figuring out how do we market to people in a more intimate way, in a more targeted way, and those dollars are going to be better spent.
Well, listen, Mark, we greatly appreciate you joining us for a few minutes again. I think one of the things that we love about the opportunity to speak with different CMOs is you can take a little snackable bites. Did you see how I just worked that word in there?
I so, like that. Little,
so clever.
Thank you, DJ. Little snackable bites away from it.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.